Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to Buzz Bitching. My name is Natalie.
And I'm Christy Fairmont.
And we're going to be covering Downton Abbey Season 5, Episodes 7 and 8.
Yay!
We're almost there.
Yay!
Not that we want this whole Downton Abbey era to be over, but we want this season to be over.
Yeah, this has not been our favorite season, so whatever.
No. Many times off podcast, as soon as we end the podcast, we're just like, we don't like this season. And so,
it's not that we don't love the characters and the sets and certain things about it.
I think there were some good ideas going into this season, but they just weren't, like we mentioned last episode, it just wasn't executed to, I think, the degree they could have.
Right, and some of it feels clunky, but anyway, so here we are, episodes 7 and 8. We are rolling up to the end of the season, and we have our usual caveats and disclaimers and things like that, which include that there will be cursing. There is likely to be spoilers. There probably already have been. And we are having things to drink. What are you having to drink now?
I think I'm having a nice ice-cold can of Coca-Cola.
How many alliterative sounds can you fit into one sentence?
I tried. Not that many.
Mm.
So, I'm having Coke.
I am having what's in the Downton Abbey cocktail book as an Archie's Memorial, which
very
is
very specific to this episode.
It is. I think the way I would describe this drink is it's very, very similar to a French 75. Is gin, lemon juice,
sage infused something.
Well,
you mentioned.
I didn't know. So gin, lemon juice, simple syrup, and a little bit of orange bitters, which is shaken with four sage leaves in a shaker, and then poured into a coupe glass and topped with sparkling wine. So everything but the sage leaves is very much of French 75. So if you've had that, you'll like this, and it's fine. I'm kind of a little over all of these
complicated,
and weird. Some of them, like that Fernet Branca stuff. Blech.
Well, to kind of preview what we might be doing next, I've gotten the next two books for cocktails for her.
Oh, yeah,
for her
birthday. It's exciting.
Yeah, I got her a Regency era, just to give you like a taste.
Yes.
A Regency era type cocktail book.
Yes.
Me and my dad kind of
collaborated.
He did most of the work because she already saw the other gift.
Accident.
You opened my Amazon package. That is not an accident.
That was totally an accident.
Either way, she ruined her own surprise, so that's on her. But Dad came in clutch and was just like, all right, how about I get her this for the next thing? And it's like, all right. And she's already looked through that and seen a couple
things.
Yeah,
there are a bunch of things with sparkling wine. We all know how much I love sparkling wine. So there we go.
And also something that might go with a certain fantasy series.
Game of Thrones.
Fine. Spoiler. I was trying to be discreet.
We have been talking about doing that series since we started.
But we're not doing right after Downton Abbey.
No.
We are planning, we might as well announce it now. We have been talking about what we want to do, and we want to do a little mini series between Downton Abbey and Game of Thrones, just to kind of ease our way back into things. And so we thought, what better way to do that than to go back to the Bridgerton universe? And so we are going to rewatch, mm-hmm. and talk about Queen Charlotte. We have a lot of thoughts.
Yes.
And I also read the book.
Which is interesting because normally I'm the person who's read the book. And so
exactly.
Maybe I need to read the book in my free time, but I haven't had time yet. So here we are.
I think you'd like the book better than you like the series.
Right. So
focused on the romance.
There are a lot of things I like about the series. We're going to talk about it. Anyway, getting back to this series, the one we're actually in the middle of right now, we are doing
Episode 7.
What are our sections for this?
They're Edith, Bates, Rose, Daisy, Tom, and Isabel.
Maybe we do Isabel?
Well, no, hers is the dinner.
Oh.
Maybe Tom? Yeah, Tom.
Okay.
Tom's pretty quick. Tom is considering going to America to live in Boston with his cousin,
mm-hmm.
who's doing really well there, and to give him and Sibby a new life. And he brings this up to many people, including like the family and Sibby. He's like, well, what, you know how Aunt Edith is up in London, right? And she's like, yes. And he's just like, well, I love that they told the children
Yeah.
that. How about we go somewhere else and start a new life? And she's like, why? And he's like, well, maybe we'd be happier there. And she's just like, but why? And she's asking all the right questions. Why the fuck are we moving? And he's just like, well, I don't know. I hope I'm doing the right thing.
Right, and you can see that Branson, he really is struggling with what is the right thing here, because he is very concerned about making sure that the village goes right and that things in the village go right. And so he's still working diligently at that job of being an agent. So it is nice to see him somewhat conflicted. There's some cute exchanges between Sibby and Donk or Robert,
Yeah.
which so is cute.
It's very cute. But also Tom mentions that he's planning to leave after Christmas, either in this episode or the next episode, it doesn't matter. So that's Tom. I guess let's talk about Daisy. Well,
Not sure.
she's kind of disheartened by the news about the Labour government kind of going belly up.
South. Well,
And
they haven't gone completely bill up, but they're
not
not doing well.
completely, no. But she's just like, oh, but my socialism, not my socialism, but you know what I mean. My
She doesn't give
labor,
it a name.
no, she
Her
doesn't,
support of
but
the Labour Party is waning, or she feels disheartened because they aren't doing better.
yes. And so she's sad and she's just like, but we should be better or something. I don't know. They give her all the really wordy, stupid political shit. And I don't like this version of Daisy. I don't really love Daisy all that much in general. So when they did this with her, I was like, why? I liked her best when she was like making a point to like Ivy about how she shouldn't string, I almost called him Archie, Alfred along and that kind of
See,
thing.
and you made fun of me for not knowing Alfred's
You
name.
said Albert, but
Closer than Archie.
well, Archie at least is related to Mrs. Patmore and a character on the show, kind of.
Not.
Anyway, I think that just in general, I think Daisy is kind of like the writers, they never really know what to do with Daisy, like because it's just kind of a rehash of her, oh, I should get fair wage kind of thing, and her strike thing and her being rebellious and all that stuff. It's dipping back her their toes back into that, but they're kind of like instead of dipping their toes, they're going like head first into the pool. And
No,
I'm just like, I don't
I
care.
see it very differently. But I see it more that the writers feel the need to have this message in there, a political message in there.
And they had
And so,
Bunting for it before, but now it's
and
Daisy.
before that they had Tom Branson and so on. So I think they feel the need to have that, and they just kind of bounce to different people as far as being the voice or the mouthpiece of that. I think in this instance, having Daisy do it's just they want a different political point of view, right? And other than just, the aristocracy is great or whatever. So they want to have that showing some effect. I think what I agree with Mrs. Patmore though, and her comment is like, how is this any different from where it was before? You just didn't know it existed before. Just because you know it existed doesn't mean your whole life has to change. She's like, and oh, I just take it so personally, and blah, blah. It's like, why? And that's how I feel about politics generally. It's like people who are all their whole lives rise and fall on politics are generally very unhappy, because there's so much of that is
It's an up and
theoretical.
down. It's
Right,
like if
it's
you live your,
theoretical.
it's almost akin to if you live your life by the stock market of
Oh,
like
yeah.
they're going to be like ups and downs. It's going to be all over the
Or by
place.
social media or whatever,
Very true.
right? I mean, I think there's
It's
just a lot of
don't stake your life on like a single thing that you can't control because it just will lead to more misery for you. There you go. That's the message that we got out of it, but maybe you didn't.
Right.
That's
So there we
why we
go.
have this podcast, to
Right.
inform people
Of our
of our
opinion.
opinions, not to make you form the same exact opinion, but maybe to convince you. It doesn't matter.
We'll see.
I also added another section I forgot was in this, ISIS.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It strikes home. We might as well cover it now. It hits close to home.
It does.
Isis has cancer. Not that any of us have cancer.
No, but, our cat was dying earlier this year.
Yeah, and we mentioned her when she was getting sick, and she was sitting with us when we were recording one day, and we mentioned her and hoped that she felt better, but she just didn't. And I think her kidneys failed in general, so. We had
Poor kitty.
We love you, Ian, and we wanted to give her a shout out because it reminded me a lot of how that felt.
Yes,
and I remember like when it actually happened. Like I wasn't in town, but it was right before I left. I was the one who noticed her getting worse, and I mentioned it, and it was bad, and I was there for her. Whenever it was closer, and then like I think the next day is when it happened, and so the day after I left, went back to college, and so when I got the call, I was like, okay, well, that we kind of knew that was going to happen. It's really sad, but whatever. But it wasn't until we like were like recording the podcast and I like talked to my parents about it that I really just started sobbing. Like it hurts to lose a pet. It really does.
It does. And so, you can see Robert's very, very torn up about it. And
he's connected to ISIS.
Right.
In many ways.
It affects some of the decisions that he makes or his acquiescence to things because he is so focused on ISIS being in this tragic situation. So it is very, very sad. And it is a great closure to this episode. So maybe we talk about it.
No, we might as well do it now. Right. Isis has cancer, and at the end of the episode, Robert says that he's going to sleep in his dressing room so that Isis can be with him because he thinks she's not going to last through the night. But Cora's like, no, you're going to sit here, and she's going to be surrounded by love.
Yeah.
And it's very sweet. It's
well,
sad.
Cora talks about, I hope that I have as peaceful and loving.
Of a send-off. Surrounded by love.
Yeah.
That she does.
Yeah.
And so that's basically how the episode ends.
But that is not how our episode ends, nor our discussion of this episode of Downton Abbey. So,
I guess let's talk about Bates next.
Yes.
Well, Anna and Mr. Bates are thinking about what they want to do with their London cottage. And they're thinking of doing another Airbnb. And so
no, what they're going to do is sell the London house and buy a house closer, like in the village, and do that as an Airbnb.
Mm-hmm. And so that's their plan. And then that was last episode. But they're mad at Baxter for talking to the police.
Yes.
Even though she's put in a very difficult situation.
They don't know what it is.
They don't know what it is. But at the same time, if you're asked something by the police, you should tell them the truth. I don't understand why they're this pissed about it. It's not like Baxter was like, oh, I'll volunteer this information to you. She's just like, okay, well, I'm being asked by the police about something. I might as well tell them.
Well, right. But I think what it is that she told the police something that was basically speculation.
Yeah, because she doesn't know anything for certain.
Right. And when this comes up, Thomas is even like, you should tell them what your circumstances are because they'll understand better than anybody else.
Oh, yeah.
Like, why you are in the situation that you're in, that you have to talk to Lisa.
But they're very cold to her. And I'm surprised Anna goes that route, to be honest, because I mean, like, I understand like people talking about you to the police must be a very awkward situation for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
However, I'm confused about why they're this mad at her.
I think that it's something they can unify about, kind of thing.
Yes,
they're back to being a little bit lovey-dovey with each other.
Yeah, they're cuter now. They've gotten over it. And Anna finally told him about why she had the contraceptive, which I don't know why we didn't see that conversation, because that's just kind of stupid to me. But I think she automatically should have been like, oh, that's not mine.
Yeah, I agree.
But whatever, that's my thought on that. But they were a little ugly to Baxter, like really cold. And I was just like, if you were called in by the police talk about other people, I don't think it's that big of a deal either, considering the police have been in and out and everybody's had to talk about them constantly. So I don't see why this is such a big deal for them. But whatever. Either way,
So
that's Bates. I guess let's talk about Edith next because we just have
did you
Daisy.
want to talk about Daisy and going to Mr. Mason's and all that stuff?
Is that this episode or next episode?
It's before the dinner because they didn't
Oh,
have.
right. You're right. Yeah, that was also in the Daisy section. You
Okay,
can talk about that.
so Daisy, Baxter, and Mosley. Mosley actually gets an invitation from Mr. Mason because he's teaching Daisy to go see Mr. Mason. With Daisy, Baxter goes.
Sorry, really quickly, with her being disheartened by the Labour government, she's considering not continuing her studies.
Right.
And that's why Molesey's like, no, you should. And then she's like, not convinced. And that's why Mrs. Patmore writes to Mr. Mason to write to Molesey to convince and to invite both Molesey and Daisy. They end up also bringing Baxter along to go and convince her otherwise. Go
Right.
ahead.
And basically the person who does the per is the person she listens to, which is Mr. Mason. And he's like, no, you need to complete your studies. You can do anything you want. Go as far as you possibly can. And they start as they drive back to the bus stop or whatever. They have this discussion about how they had previously had a dinner where Dickie Martin and his oldest son had been at the dinner, and it ended up being a big scandal because Dickie's oldest son, as we all know, Larry, is a dickhead. And so it was a big kerfluffle. And
Kerfuffle.
whatever, I heard it as kerfluffle, but whatever. But there had been a big deal, and Mr. Mason's like, I'm here. I thought, well, working in a big house would be boring.
Yeah,
And they're
I
all
love
kind of like,
Mr. Mason.
oh, well,
Yeah, I would
so.
also like to add another section of Mary. I was very lazy when we did these sections, apparently. But yeah, Mary has a little mini thing to do as well. So that's basically Daisy's story. She decides to continue with her studies. So let's talk about Mary really quick. Mary and Charles Blake are trying to figure out what to do about Tony and Mabel because they want them to be together. Well, Mary wants to make sure it's not too easy for him, but at the same time, she wants to make it clear that she doesn't want him anymore.
Right. One of the things I really like about how Charles, talks about Mary in these both of these episodes is basically he's like, look, she wants to help hold all men in thrall, but she's doesn't want Tony.
Yeah. But so what Charles Blake decides is that, okay, Mary, you're going to come up to London to like tomorrow night and you're not going to ask any questions. You're just going to go to the movies with me and I will try to make this right. So what happens, and there's some stuff on the train at the train station that we'll talk about in a minute with Edith, but Mary goes up to London, they go to the movies, they leave a little bit early into the movie, and Charles Blake is just like, all right, do exactly what I say. And as the movie's letting out, he kisses her. And as Tony and Mabel come out, and Tony's like, you didn't really need this big like charade,
Stage
this
thing,
like this tableau to really convince me otherwise. But and she's like, well, I hope you guys are happy. And then
and Mabel's like, yeah, I hope so too.
And as they're leaving, Charles Blake is just like, yeah, it's time to marry. And Mary's like, yeah, I think we actually did need that tableau just to make sure, but I think we did the right thing. So thank you about for that. Let's get dinner. And he's also going to Poland for a while, for a couple of months. So that proves why he can't be her love interest now. Whatever. They just don't want Charles Blake to win. And so that's that with Charles Blake.
All right, what were our other sections?
All that's left is Edith, Rose, and Isabel.
Let's do Edith.
Yeah. So Edith is up in London. And it's oddly
She's.
enough, Atticus who thinks, hey, let's talk to her like publishing firm to like see where she is. Surprise, she would be there. And Rose is like, how clever you are. I'm like, he's not an idiot. So love you, Atticus. Thank you for actually being a sane person. And so Cora and Rosamond. Well, okay, first of all, Mrs. Drew comes to Downton right before Violet and Rosamond are going to tell Cora the truth. But Mrs. Drew beats them to the punch, and Cora's very, very hurt that they didn't let her in on the secret. And
Just
she's
with
definitely
Violet.
not, yeah, especially Violet, and that she's not going to really trust her ever again. And so Cora and Rosamond go back up to London to go to the publishing company. to see Edith, and they're just like, we'll wait here all day. We just need to see Edith.
And they find out that Edith has her staff lying to them about whether she's there.
Yes. I love that Edith is just like, don't tell anyone I'm here ever. And they just aren't asking really any questions. Either way, so Edith comes in and is like, how on earth did you find me? It's like, it wasn't that hard. Atticus came up with it, and he doesn't even know you. He's not met you, really. He's met you once at a dinner where you like stormed off and didn't eat dinner. So either way, he just based off of like bare bones of like activity of yours, he figured it out. But so they talk into Tea Room and they're talking strategy. Cora basically wants to do whatever Edith wants, but she wants Marigold to be in their life. So what Cora suggests is that they bring back little Marigold, and they're going to say that Mrs. Drew felt that she was a little bit too much of a burden on them, and that she feels that she can't take care of her, and Edith will adopt her. And so that's the plan. And so on the way back to London, not to London, to Yorkshire, down, they're on the train in first class. Mr. Drew is going to pick up Marigold at the platform so things don't look weird. And so that he's like in position of the child to like hand over later. And so Mr. Drew comes in, but they notice Mary's on the platform to go up to London to talk to Charles Blake about stuff. So they have Drew come into the carriage with Marigold and go to the next stop so things don't look suspicious.
Just noting, Anna sees all this.
And Anna sees it.
This is weird.
Mm-hmm.
She's right.
And about when we figure out that Isis has cancer, Edith is talking to the family about, hey,
I'm going to adopt this little girl.
And also Cora and all them decided that they were not going to tell... that they weren't going to tell Robert about it, which again I think is stupid.
Yeah,
keeping that from anybody in the family is stupid.
Cora's like, no, we should tell him. But
to a certain extent, I understand why they would keep it for Mary, kind of, just because you know that she'd make her life a living hell. However, Mary's not really one to talk for having sex outside of marriage, so twice. But still, well, multiple times if you count all the times she did with Tony. But I think that just in general, I think keeping it a secret in general from the family is a big mistake.
It is.
And we find out later that it probably is. Either way, so Cora is basically left with the decision on whether or not they should take in the child, and they obviously, like, Mary pokes holes in all this like shit that it's just like, well, why don't you just give them some money so they can take care of the child? And then Edith's like, well, I think it's a little bit too hard on her anyway. And Mary's like, that's stupid. And
the rest of us are like, this is a really, really obvious thing, and I think Mary knows exactly what's going on, but
I think whatever. She knows to a certain extent. I don't think she really cares enough about Edith to think about it that much.
Sure.
But still, Edith ends up getting Marigold into the nursery, and she's very, very happy. So let's move on to Isabel. Isabel is going to meet the family.
Dickie's boys.
Dicks.
Yes.
Little
dicks.
Larry and what the fuck is his name?
Mo, Curly, whatever.
Who fucking cares? Dick. So Tom, Dick, and Larry. Sorry. I couldn't resist.
Yeah.
So Dick and Larry are at the dinner. They're going to have a dinner where Isabel's going to meet the family officially as like, oh, I'm engaged to your father now. And they do not take it very well. They apparently were very, very close to their mother and take after her in many ways. So you can only imagine how wonderful their mother was.
Well, and we'd gotten that impression from Dickie that she was an awful person. But part of what happens, and it's really awful the way Larry's just snobbish about, oh, well, you know, obviously you've got the chauffeur. I mean, you're not
a Jew. And I'm like,
and you're about to have a Jew in the family, so I guess you don't care about
what's with all the anti-Semitism. Why does it fucking matter?
Well, but it's not just that. It's, oh, but this middle class nothing, she'll never take the place of our mother, who was a great lady.
Fuck
She's
you.
Not a great lady.
Ridiculous.
And, right. And Branson does the exact right thing, not drunk this time, just stands up and says, "Get out of here, you bastard."
Yeah, so Larry and has to leave.
Larry has to leave the table. His younger brother, though, at that point turns to Izzy. I was like, "Well, what did you expect? Like,
we'd accept you with open arms." I'm like, "Fuck you.
Yeah, like, what the
Why do you care?
These people?
Exactly. Why do you care?
Why do you want your father unhappy?
Like, you are barely a part what of your father's fuck? Life at this point. You have your own lives in London. Who cares what he's doing in Yorkshire? Like, who fucking cares? Let him be happy. Do you just hate your father that much?"
Yeah.
And he and Dickie's very, very, very embarrassed.
Well, but yeah, Larry also says snotty shit about Matthew. It's like, go yeah. fuck yourself, you fucking loser.
And like, Robert's like, "Oh, you're talking to the mother of my former heir," and they're just like, "Whatever, I don't
we
care."
All have a grubby relative.
Exactly. And
fuck
then
you.
And then it pans over to Mary, who's just so offended on Matthew's behalf as well.
Yeah,
where it's just like, you're insulting so many people right now, what the fuck is wrong
Get
with
out
you
of the house.
And so essentially, yeah, they're kicked out, and Isabel is starting to have is feeling a bit apprehensive about whether or not she should even like continue on with the engagement.
Yeah.
And we'll see a
but
bit more of
that
later.
In that moment, somebody is inspired.
Yeah. So let's talk about my favorite section ever, Rose and Atticus.
Ever? Oh, it's not better than Matthew Mary.
Oh, no, but it's the best out of this season. For
oh,
sure.
For sure.
So, not ever. Sorry. I didn't mean to be. I forgot. So, let's talk about Rose and Atticus. So Rose and Atticus are going wild. They're going steady. And
oh, they're, so
they're so cute. And so they meet the family. They meet the parents. The wife, Lady Cinderby, is fantastic. We love her.
Yes. Yeah,
Lady Cinderby
so
is such
great.
A queen.
Yes,
I love her.
She's great.
And she stands up. She sees how happy Atticus is with Rose. And she wants, all that she wants is for her son to be happy. She doesn't really care if they marry in the faith. They don't, she doesn't really care about that. But she admires Rose for not caring as well.
Right.
And so.
But Lord Cinderby, who gets
is a purist
on Game of Thrones, which, you know, we kind of have to appreciate.
Yeah, we do have to appreciate that. So he is not a fan that Rose is not Jewish. And even though Rose doesn't care, and nobody really cares about her not being Jewish, including Atticus, which is the opinion that really matters,
right.
He's not convinced that she should be married to him.
Well, and Robert actually points this out to, I think, Cora when they're talking about it. He's like, look, he's just a very big figure in the Jewish community.
Yeah.
And I think that that's part of his concern is that he'll lose respect of other people in the Jewish community.
But we'll see later on that Rose is trying to keep up appearances as well.
Right. She's trying to make it work, and she doesn't understand all the ins and outs because no one's explained it to her.
Because
and...
no, yeah, exactly. No one's explained it to her. She wants to, but no one's explained it.
Right. And I somewhat fault Lord Cinderby for that. But
absolutely. But if you really want her to know all this stuff.
Because Lord Cinderby and Cora have this discussion. Cora's father was Jewish.
Yeah.
And so they have a discussion about the fact that Mr. Levinson was Jewish. And she's like, well, hey, we didn't even change our name. So we're not embarrassed about our past. What's your deal, dude?
Yeah, what's up with you? Mm-hmm. Anyway, so Rose and Atticus, she invites Atticus to the gray dinner. And there, it's kind of like the Red Wedding, but worse. Not worse.
Definitely not worse.
But she invites Atticus because she wants to spend so much time with Atticus. Like they've been meeting for tea and like meeting halfway and
they're
like
adorable.
I think Rippin or something. They're so cute. And he's really cute. And he's really nice.
And we don't get enough of him.
We don't. And I'm really disappointed that they didn't introduce him earlier in the season. As soon as we hear about the refugees, he should have been introduced. That's what I think.
Yeah. I'm
like maybe like episode 3 or something.
But
to
no.
build it up. But no, he only gets like a 3-ish episode arc. 4, really. But either way, Rose and Atticus are at this dinner with the Greys, and he's insulted. What did he do? He's just
Nothing.
Existing. Fuck you guys. And so he, like, afterwards, Rose is like, I'm so sorry this ended like this. And he's just like, well, how about we make this make a better memory on top of this, like a positive memory out of this horrible.
Yeah, we're gonna be attacked from all sides, and we know why not we can handle it.
Why don't we have something really to fight for? And so he's like, and she's just like, I'm not going to answer if you don't sit and do it properly. And it's very reminiscent of the Mary and Matthew proposal.
Like, he's like, I have to get on my knees?
And she's like, yes, you do. And then not for long, because I know what my answer is. And so he gets down on his knee, and she accepts his proposal, of course. And he gets back up, they kiss, and then Carson walks by.
Yeah.
They're like in a little secret nook or whatever. It's kind of similar to where Mary and Pamuk were-ish. Kind of. Not the same place, but like in a similar vein as them, like kissing in like secret. Mm-hmm. And Carson walks by and they have to like go apart, and it's really, really cute. Yeah. It's just really sweet. I'm so happy. And Isabel knows immediately that they're going to outshine them as far as weddings are concerned.
Right. And she's not like feeling super warm toward Dickie after all this stuff. And poor Dickie, I feel sorry for him.
It's not Dickie's fault that he had bad children.
Well, yeah. Okay. All right. So that's basically the episode. What were your best parts?
Charles Blake. I just love Charles Blake. I really do. I like his little plan to make sure that like Tony and Mary stay apart. It's nice. I like that he gets to kiss Mary for once. Well, even if it's a part of the plan.
He's already said, I'm going to Poland. So
yeah. So fuck that. Rose and Atticus, I absolutely adore. I love Rose and Atticus. They're great. 10 out of 10. Love them. Isabel getting engaged in general, like, I love that she's taking something for herself, even though it doesn't really end that well. She's at least announcing something and taking something for herself to be a little bit selfish, but in the best way, so that she has something happy about to, like, talk about. Violet, I like in this episode because Violet kind of fights Isabel's corner a bit, and she also fights to like tell, make sure Rosamond and her tell Cora. She feels really guilty about not telling Cora in the first place, and so she fights for that. Cora, I really appreciate Cora in this episode. I like that she respects Edith's choice, even if Edith's being an idiot. But this should have been what happened in the beginning. But either way.
All right. Yeah, I wrote
down. No, I'm not done. But yeah, I like that Cora is also mad at Rosamond and Violet, like, for keeping this from her. Like, it's one thing for Edith to keep it from her, but it's completely different when other, like, third parties, also who know the information don't divulge it. And it's just kind of, it's annoying. Also, Thomas. I like that Thomas told Baxter to, like, tell the Bateses to just tell them, because they've been through God knows how much, and they'll know. Bates especially should know, because he was charged as a thief. So it's all in the same household. And also Mr. Mason. I just like Mr. Mason. He's really cool. He's like a Saved by the Bell character who just kind of like comes in and delivers the moral of the day. And I'm just like, I really appreciate that. Not that I've seen much of Saved by the Bell, but still, I kind of like that he just comes in and is just like, you should keep being educated. And I'm just like, thanks, Mr. Mason.
I really don't think I've seen any of Saved by the Bell.
I haven't either, but I know that it's like a not villain of the week, but lesson of the week kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like any kind of children's programming, like here's the moral of the day. But he's like very much the character who delivers on that, and it's just funny. All right, you go ahead.
Rose and Atticus, obviously, I love. Yeah. One of the things we didn't talk about with Violet in this, and Violet and Mary have some interesting exchanges in this episode. So early on, Mary is snotty about Edith when Edith's not present. And Violet's like, you know, a dearth of compassion is as bad
as an excess of tears.
And so
at the dinner table.
Right. And so it's kind of interesting to see Violet say that, but shortly after that, Mary goes to tea with Violet, and she knows, and she kind of calls Violet down for being ugly about Isabel, And Violet's honest.
Oh, that's why I wrote it down.
Yeah. Violet's honest with her and says, I'm going to miss Isabel as a friend.
Yeah, it's really sweet.
We have a lot in common. I really liked having her as a friend. Because Mary's like, oh, she's looked up to you and blah, blah, blah. And she's like, I don't think she looked up to me. We're peers.
Yeah.
Which is really nice for her to actually acknowledge, because that's true. You know, despite the fact that she's constantly trying to be like, oh, I'm the great lady kind of thing. I think it is really nice to see her acknowledge it somewhere, even though she doesn't acknowledge it to Isabel directly. She does later. And I like that kind of rings the bell for her and she realizes, oh, you know, I'm being an asshole.
Mm-hmm.
So I like Violet in this. I like Branson. I like his introspection in this. And I love Cora. It didn't hit me as hard when I watched it this time, but when they're sitting there, it's Cora, Rosamond, and Edith talking about what should happen with this child. And Rosamond has thoughts and Edith has thoughts, and like they're coming up with stupid stories. And Cora's like, no.
She's coming home.
She's going to be our grandchild. Shit's going to happen. This is the way it needs to be. You should tell your father. If you're not, fine, I'll support you. I get it, but you're going to need to tell him eventually.
Or
he's going to figure it out. Fine. But this is what's going to happen. And, you know, she says it with so much authority that they actually listen to her, which is kind of nice.
I love that. I love when Cora does that.
Yeah, I love when Cora does it, because she does, again, each of these characters at one point or another has moral authority. And this is one of those situations where Cora does. And
yeah.
I like that for her. So those were my best,
especially after her shitty season.
Yeah.
My worst parts are Daisy. I hate that she's becoming the mouth for like all their political leanings. Especially back in the day. I'm just like, I don't care. I mean, I understand where they're going with it, but she's just spewing Wikipedia articles at me.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I don't care. It's a lot like, not really exactly the same, but it's similar enough to Eloise from Bridgerton that they're just kind of talking down to the audience about it, and I'm just like, I don't care. I understand that like there shouldn't be this kind of division with like the lower and upper class and the servants and like upper class. I understand that. I'm not an idiot, and also things have changed.
Well, right, and I think that's one of the things that Mr. Mason kind of points out. Like, your education can make such a difference in where you end up.
So. And Mosley is constantly telling Daisy, but Daisy doesn't listen to Mosley.
Mosley acknowledges that she doesn't listen. So, yeah.
Also, Tony at the beginning of this episode is very much like, "Well, I can't give Mary up," and I'm just like, "What?" Fuck that. She literally told you. And like, he's just like, well, you could have just told me. And Mary's like, I did. I did tell you that I was not interested anymore. But no. Bates being rude to Baxter, I think I can understand them being a little bit like annoyed that like this whole bullshit investigation is still going on. But I don't understand why they're that mad at Baxter for talking to the police.
Because she doesn't say exactly what she said. Anyway, I'll talk about that.
They aren't even in the room. They don't know what she said.
Right, exactly.
I think it's stupid. I hate this investigation. Edith being like, oh, you can't, like, there's this moment where Cora's like, can I see the child? And she's like, no, I don't think you can. I'm like, why not? You're acting like Mrs. Drew when you hated her. I don't understand why you're barring this grandmother barring her from your grandchild when she has done nothing wrong. Like, she just wants to see your child. Is that so hard? She eventually does, obviously. She's in the train ride with her. But it's so stupid. I hate it. Larry and Idiot Gray. I gave him the name Idiot. They're just awful.
Yeah, I didn't actually write them down, but yeah, they're fucking
How
terrible.
Did you not? They're awful.
I know. I mean, I hate him. He's one of those, like, things you want to obliterate, like, and again, he's not a character that completely goes away either, so it's like,
true.
Fuck. Yeah. Anyway,
well,
so,
more Larry than him, I suppose.
Yeah, whatever. So, are you done?
Yeah,
my worst parts, I actually didn't like Baxter in this, and I like her with Mosley, and I need to correct it. Let me finish.
No, I agree. Go ahead.
So, Baxter, what bothers me is that she hasn't really told the Bateses what she said, number one.
Yeah.
She does, you know, at some point previously had volunteered, oh, I'll tell them that the ticket was whole. And they're kind of like, well, that's, you know, it sounds like she's making something up to them. Like, I told them something else. And so now I'm going to say this thing. But she never says why. And she doesn't give a reason why she won't tell them her backstory.
Yeah.
And that's just dumb to me. And I don't like it. And, sure. it, you know, again, it's dishonesty. And I don't like that drawing. I don't like Anna and Bates in this.
Yeah, I agree.
Really don't. And there's going to be like several. And I generally like their characters, but I think they have been done.
The constant prison cycle is just ruining them for me.
Right. I mean, they've been done such a disservice, I think, with this whole storyline, and it just bothers me. Right. And obviously Larry Gray, who fucking sucks, and his horrible brother, who is just a tag-along fucking sex person.
He's like a yes man.
Yeah, exactly. So we're done with that. So what grade did you give this episode?
I originally gave it a B-, but I think it's a B. I think Atticus and Rose save it.
Yeah, I gave it a B. I think, and I'm not, I don't have a great justification for it. Just, you know, it's not
it's
as
better.
Bad as the other season. It's better. Season
the seasons. I don't know why, but it's better. I think it's Atticus and Rose and the constant dinner parties I like. All right, so let's move on to episode 8. The sections are Edith, obviously, Isabel's very brief. Rose is a huge one. Investigation, War Memorial. I didn't go in there saying it was a question. Violet, Andrew, and Danka. Okay. Calm down. Let's really quickly do Isabel. Isabel's contemplating whether or not she wants to break off the engagement based on how awfully his sons reacted. And she doesn't want to make them uncomfortable, and she doesn't want her life to be more uncomfortable. And so she's still considering what to do. She asks Violet advice, and Violet's like, fight for him. If you really care about him, fight for him.
Right.
And she's like, let war commence, essentially. Like, just fight for him. And Isabel takes that into consideration, and I like that Violet's now fighting for them. Really quickly, let's do Edith. Edith is... really
loving her child.
She is mother of the year, according to Edith. And so she...
Look, I have a nanny for my child then.
Yeah. Either way, she is doting on her child, obviously, as one should. But, like, Mary and Tom are, like... Mary's really annoyed with her, especially because she's just like, well, now that she has a child to... like dote on, she's like pretending to be mother of the year and pretending that we aren't good parents. And Edith is constantly worrying about Marigold and all that stuff. I mean, yeah. Like, as a parent should to a certain degree, but it's just like,
well, Robert even clocks it. He's like, this is kind of weird.
Yeah. And
the
then
way
Robert
she's behaving is weird.
That, and also he has this sense of deja vu whenever he sees Marigold. And so he eventually figures out that it's because, oh, look, it looks like Michael Gregson and Edith had a baby. And so...
And he says something to Cora, and Cora's like, well, now you're in on the secret. He's like, I'm finally in on a secret. That's
finally! I never let it on a secret. I don't know why. It's not like he's going to give it away to anybody. No. I don't understand why he's never let it on the secret.
No, I think they just fear his indignation.
Oh, sure. But, like, he doesn't care. And, well, now he doesn't care. But, yeah, so he's like, I'm going to love her as a grandfather, and that will be that. And so he's let it on the secret, which is exciting.
And that's
sweet. That's Edith and Isabel. Let's talk really quickly about Violet.
So Violet, Prince Krogan, or the Russian, formerly known as Prince, shows up at her house. And he's like, I want to run away with you. And she's like, stop it. And she's kind of like,
you're still married
and
he's like, she's in Hong Kong,
right? And she's kind of like, look, I cannot get involved with a married man, and that's like one of those hardline things I'm just not gonna do. But he's like, I don't live as lovers, we don't have much time left, I want to do all these things, and I want to be happy because, you know, I want to die happy, basically.
Yeah.
And she's kind of like, I can't do this because you're married. And I think you need to, you know, process that because you are not. And so she's feeling a bit sad because, you know, this is a possibility for her, obviously, but she's not going to let go of her principles and just do whatever. And so, because she is, as people keep saying, she is a great lady. She actually is somebody who has principles. And she's like, I'm just not going to do that. And that's part of what fuels her advice to Isabel. Like, look, you are in a position where you can take advantage of love. You should. And so I think that's a lot of what we see with Violet. Is there anything that I missed there?
No.
Okay.
I don't think so.
Okay.
So I also added another section of Daisy. Let's really quickly talk about Daisy. Daisy is in awe of the art that is now available to her, even though it was available then.
In London. I went to a museum with Mosley and Baxter, and suddenly I know there's art.
And now I can be better. I don't know. And she's like, all right, I'm going to hand in my notice. And Padmore's like, what the fuck? Are you kidding? And she starts like being really upset about it because of course she is.
Yeah, Mrs. Padmore really loves Daisy like a daughter. And is terribly sweet, actually, how moved she is by the possible loss of Daisy. And so Daisy, you know, is like, oh, I want to be a better, you know, I could get a job in London, I could do all these things. And Mrs. Power's like, yeah, you can. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then she's just upset because this is someone she cares about.
But in the end, when Mr. Mason is told about this potential, like going to London and getting a new job thing, Daisy's like, oh, I didn't mean that. Don't worry about it. I'm not going to go. And so that lasted all one episode. Less than one episode. And so Daisy's not leaving.
No, she's not. But, you know, Mrs. Patmore is very reassured by the fact that Daisy, and, you know, I think it was seeing Mrs. Patmore's emotion about it that she really realized how loved she is where she is.
Sure.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So that's Daisy. I guess let's do
Danka, or do you want to go straight from to the war?
Yeah, that makes sense for Daisy.
All right, so Mrs. Patmore doesn't want to go to the unveiling of the war memorial, and it's only a very small part of this episode, but the beginning and the end. She doesn't want to go because of Archie not being included, which is what it is. But Robert has heard about it, and he is actually having a memorial or a gravestone for Isis made, and he realizes, hey,
I could do something similar.
And so what he does is he invites Mrs. Patmore to the unveiling. The unveiling is actually really very somber and appropriate, and acknowledges the sacrifices of people, and Mr. Mason sitting front and center. And right at the end, Robert says, you know, we have a memorial to somebody else that, you know, while he was not from our village, people here loved him. And he unveils this memorial to Archie.
Yeah.
And Mrs. Patmore is brought over, and Mrs. Patmore cries. And it's actually really kind of lovely.
It's very sweet.
It is very sweet. And so that's pretty much the Archie's memorial. I will say that the cocktail was much more drinkable than I had expected it to be.
So yay, Archie's memorial.
Yeah.
All right. Memorial. Let's talk about Andrew.
I want to say one other thing. The inclusion of sage leaves, for those of you who are into that kind of poetry, parsley, sage, rosemary, and thyme, those are supposed to be herbs of memory. And so the sage being included in this is part of that. And it does infuse a bit of flavor to it that is not quite a French 75, so cool.
Okay, so let's talk about Andrew and Danka. So Andrew is Andy. The footman who, I like Andy.
I do too, but I feel sorry for him.
I do too.
His introduction is sad.
It's mid. Andrew is brought in to be a footman for them for Rose's wedding, and he's hired in London, and he gets pulled into the wrong crowd, which is Danka.
Danka is the wrong crowd. I don't like Danka.
I hate Danka
throughout, and she.
I don't understand why she's even a part of this.
I don't either.
I don't care about her. I don't like her.
And
like Sprat has a funny thing later, but I don't care about Danka. She doesn't really have a part of this.
She's kind of like a foil to Sprat, but I like Sprat so much better.
Sprat is so dramatic.
Yeah. So Danka sees him as fresh meat, basically. So she is very familiar with London. She is obviously there as Violet's lady's maid. She's like, hey, Andy, let's go out and let's, you know, hit the town, you know, whatever. So she takes him, and apparently has been taking him to a couple of these kind of underground gambling clubs, and he's been losing a lot of money. So the club is making a lot of money off of him.
And she has not been interacting with him since
As soon as she goes in, she gets basically paid off to drink. Like, part of him losing to the house is that she gets paid to, like, she can drink as much as she wants.
Yeah.
And because they've got, you know, this Patsy who's going to lose money. They go a couple of nights. Andy's unhappy. He hates it. Thomas is paying attention to this because, of course, Thomas is like, hey,
new guy.
He's a fresh meat person.
I'm off my no gay medicine. So let's do this.
Right. And he's cute.
Note
this, the actor that plays Andy is actually dating the actress that plays Edith in real life. I think they might actually be together. Married. Yeah.
You didn't know that?
Oh, you need to Google it. Anyway, so he is...
You've blown my mind. I'm sorry.
But he's cute. And cute.
Laura
Carmichael. Right. So he is... Thomas is like,
partner Michael Fox since 2018.
There you go.
Since 2018. So this was made in 2015. So afterwards, but they probably met on set.
I'm sure they did.
That's so cute.
It is very cute. And they're cute. So that's great.
They have a child.
Yes, they do. So, which is lovely.
I love that.
And her name is Marigold. No.
No. That's not. Anyway. Oh, wait. Now the Wikipedia article is saying 2014. To present.
See?
So maybe they knew each other before.
Filmed.
That's really cute. It I didn't know that.
Cute. No, it's very cute.
I love that.
That's lovely. So anyway, so long and short of it is that they are, Danka and Andy are going to go one more time and Thomas is going to go with them. And Thomas basically tells the guy, he wins at the table, is able to pay off all of Andy's debts to the house, and tells the owner of the place, oh, hey, that Danka lady, we're not associated with her. She's been drinking for free, and you need to charge her for all of her drinks. And she's been getting wasted. She got so wasted that they were late coming back for an evening do.
Just to put her Violet to bed.
Yeah. And she wasn't available because she was, quote, unquote, sick. What she was actually doing is dancing and drunk in the... kitchen area, and she's offended even Mrs. Hughes. It takes work to offend Mrs. Hughes, so
she's not a woman of the world, but she doesn't live in a sack.
Yeah, exactly. Mrs. Hughes has had enough. And when Mrs. Hughes said enough, all of us have had enough.
Mm-hmm.
So there we are. That's basically the Danka Andy thing.
Well, Thomas.
What about Thomas?
Thomas comes in the fray.
I did. I talked about Thomas.
Did you?
Yes.
I was too busy Googling.
I'm sorry.
I was very captivated. I had no idea that they were together.
I didn't. I'm sorry.
I'm very happy. I'm happy for them. I love that.
I think
good for them. Happy for them. Have a nice life. Yes. Love that. Thanks. Anyway, I'm sorry. I'm just blown away. Okay.
How much we had to drink?
Coke.
Wait, you're drinking Coke. Is it caffeine? Are you binging caffeine here?
I suppose I am. Maybe I'm going a little crazy.
Embarrassed.
Either way. I guess let's talk about the investigation and the book.
Oh, God. The investigation escalates in this episode. So the investigation now focuses on Anna, because whoever the eyewitness is says that the person that they saw at Piccadilly was shorter than Mr. Green, and that can't be Bates because Bates is taller. And so they assume that it must be Mrs. Bates. They've also discovered that apparently Mr. Green had been attacking slight women who hadn't been encouraging him at all. At other places that he had been.
Well, he seemed to be a serial rapist.
He definitely did. He was able to plan this quite well. So
it was awful.
In any case, Scotland Yard wants Mrs. Bates to show up in London. She, of course, is going to London for Rose's wedding anyway. They put her in a lineup. Bates is furious. And they, at the end of the episode,
Arrest.
Anna is arrested.
Because she was identified by the London.
Right. And so Anna is arrested. Mary is trying to intervene. Robert is actually trying to hold Bates back, kind of thing. Yeah. You know, because Bates is like, oh, you can't take my wife. And Bates is already thinking of ways he can help Anna.
Yeah.
And it's just
bad.
Yeah, it's bad. And it's annoying, and it's not really, I don't know.
They thought this whole time that they would have to cover for Bates with the whole train ticket bullshit, but no, they're gonna have to cover for Anna, which is harder to do considering we don't know what she was up to in London.
Right.
So yeah. Okay, let's talk about Rose, my favorite plot line of the entire episode.
A lot. This is a complicated plot line.
It's complicated, but I actually, just to preface, I really love this plot line.
I do too.
I really just love every element of it. I think it's clever.
I'm going to say this. Some of these penultimate episodes, you know,
which is so good.
We like you know, the ultimate episodes of many of these seasons, but the penultimate episodes, like last season's, or a couple seasons ago, we had like the whole thing with Cricket and that kind of thing. Yeah. And so there are some really good penultimate episodes, and this is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
So
let's get into it. So Rose is going, and Atticus are going to get married at the register's office in London.
Yeah.
And yeah, me too. Yay. So, and Rose also mentions before they really get into it, she's talking about, hey, I want to do a church blessing, but I also want to do a blessing in the synagogue to represent both faiths. But Lord Cinderbreeze's like, no, that's insulting. You don't know anything about it. No, that won't be possible. And Rose is like, okay, well, I tried. And it's clear. And so Susan and Shrimpy are in town for the wedding. And they are very much separated, very close, the cusp of divorce. They are very much, they don't want, Susan in particular does not want to be even near Shrimpy. And
she doesn't want to hide the fact that they're about to get divorced. I think that that's problematic in this episode.
Very much so. And however, Lord Cinderbree mentions at the first dinner of the knights in London that he has there are a couple of things on his list of things that he just hates. And one of them is divorce. And so Susan's like, ooh, she has like money in her eyes, kind of like stars in her eyes kind of thing. I'm like, oh, I can ruin this.
Why she wants to ruin her daughter's marriage, I don't know.
She doesn't seem, and she's also anti-Semitic.
What purpose? I mean, what is the,
what
is
this achieve? Here? Like, it doesn't matter. And so I don't know why she wants to ruin her daughter's life at every turn. And initially it's like Rose is being exacerbating things and being like, oh, she's ruining my life, like most teenagers do. However, Rose is right. Yeah. She is trying to ruin her life. And so,
despicable,
yes,
my opinion.
But Shrimpy's trying to hold them together. Lady Cinderbee's trying to hold the other side together. And so it gets to the point where Susan sends money to a photographer and a lady to really quickly, Atticus is having a stag night and he's staying in the hotel because they ran out of room with their relatives at their London house. Apartment or house, and so he's staying at a hotel. And they're having a stag night. It's going well. He's very drunk, but he's like, he hasn't lost his senses yet.
And he's like, you all have a good time. Yeah, I'm going to bed.
Put on my tab, whatever. He goes into the elevator and he makes eye contact with this one woman, but it doesn't really like matter. He doesn't really, it's not like that. And the woman comes into his into the elevator with him and is kind of like touchy-feely or whatever.
And he's like, no.
And he's like, I'm sorry if I gave, like, grabs her hands to take them off of him. And he's like, listen, I'm sorry if I gave you the wrong idea, but I'm not interested, as you should. And so he goes, and she's like, all right, whatever. And she goes out of the elevator and he goes up to his room. He's getting undressed and someone knocks on his door. He puts his robe on, mostly, not all the way, which makes things worse. And he opens the door and it's the lady again. She goes into his room. She kind of dishevels herself, puts her like dress on, like down on her shoulders, so it looks like she's just put it on. She kind of like ruffles stuff and she's like, all right, bye, leaves the room. And he like goes to the door like, what the fuck was that?
Right, and the photographer is in a position where it looks like
it looks bad. Yeah, it looks like he spent the night with a harlot. And it's bad. And so Mary, Edith, Tom, and Rose decide, I love that Mary's like, we should go out to lunch with
even you, Edith.
Because they know that Tom is going to be moving away after Christmas, and so they want to. It's very sad, and Mary's especially sad that she's losing an ally. Mm-hmm. And so, and Rose was also considered an ally for Mary, and so it's just her and Edith now. But
she's like, oh my god, I'm sick.
Why are you doing this to me? Yeah. But either way, it's complicated. But so they're at this lunch, and Rose is sent by messenger these pictures that just say last night, and it's bad pictures of him holding her hands in the elevator. Yeah. Atticus holding her hands in the elevator, and looking a bit disheveled as well because he's drunk. I mean, that happens. But and also of her leaving his room disheveled, and so Rose freaks out. But Tom's like, "Listen, how about this? You need to talk to Atticus about this." And so later on, when Daisy and Molesley and Baxter, and they go, I put them in my notes really quickly as a weird trio, but it's interesting. But while they're coming back from the museum, they see them in the park, Atticus and Rose in the park, and Rose is like, no, this is ridiculous, no. And just stay away from me. I can't deal with this. She's very confused. She's very scared that this is all falling apart in front of her. Mm-hmm. And she's just disappointed. But in the end, she does believe Atticus did not do this. But Atticus confronts his father.
Because he believes his father is the one who sent the pictures.
Yes.
Like, because his father has been so against the marriage.
From the beginning.
And so, and Rose also, you know, obviously she's told Mary. Mary starts, like, asking around, like.
About Lord Cinderby.
About Lord Cinderby, like, thinking that maybe he did this. Because, of course, Branson thinks that, too. Like, Lord Cinderby's been an ass, so maybe it's him. And they start asking around. They ask Violet. She mentions that Mary messaged it to Shrimpy, and Shrimpy's like, oh.
Let me take care of this.
Yeah.
So Shrimpy goes to Susan after a dinner with the other side of the family as well.
Oh, my God. Susan's awful.
Susan's the worst. And Shrimpy is like, how dare you do that to our daughter? That is absolutely ridiculous. I found the check stub. I know it's you. You're being ridiculous. Leave Rose alone. And she's like, oh, we've fallen so far. We've lost our house. We've lost our
position,
and now we're losing our daughter to
these people.
It's like, you're not losing her. You basically gave up your daughter when she didn't come to Bombay with you. Think
the world has changed, and she's marrying into a family that is titled
rich.
Yeah, what everything. The fuck is wrong
with
you?
He loves her. Yeah. Atticus loves her. Leave her alone.
She loves him.
Yeah.
I mean, fuck you. I'm sorry.
I hate her. I hate her so much. Anyway, so Shrimpy is like, you're not going to mess with this wedding anymore. Fuck you. I hate you.
And what he says is, if I find out that you disclose our pending divorce or anything else, do anything else to try to ruin this wedding, I'm going to tell Rose, and that's going
to
be the end.
Yeah, she's going to never want a relationship with you ever again. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious what you want to achieve with this. Make Rose miserable. And then nothing.
Right.
So. Anyway, so at the wedding, of course, Susan's like, I can't keep it to myself any longer. And in front of everyone, except for Rose and Trimpy, who are like about to be walking down the aisle at the registrar's office, but still. And she says, me and Trimby are getting a divorce. And Lord Cinderby goes batshit, is about to go batshit. But Lady Cinderby is like,
so
if you don't calm down and let this marriage happen, I will divorce you. And that will be more of a scandal than this. So calm down, step down, shut up. I love Lady Cinderby. Yeah, she's the best. Right. And Atticus is right in the middle of this. And it's just like, thank God for mom.
Yeah, exactly. and the thing about it is that Rose doesn't find out until after that any of this happened, but
she also doesn't find out about the pictures, because Shrimpy is like, oh, I figured out who sent those pictures. She's like, oh, who? And she's like, he's like, you don't know him. Don't worry about it.
Right. Well, and she says something in passing that both Lady Cinderby and Lord Cinderby overhear, which is, oh, it's not his style. Mm-hmm. It's not Lord Cinderby's style.
And Lady Cinderby's like, you know him. She knows you better than you think.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically,
he's too direct. I mean,
absolutely. He would absolutely do something more direct.
Is
conniving bitch.
Yeah.
But she kind of switches tactics towards the end, but just because she's desperate, for whatever reason. And so basically what happens is that he is just, he's awful. I hate it.
Rose Enderby's awful?
Yeah, well, everybody's awful. And, not Rose Enderby's, but Rose goes up to, Susan. And she is just like, I heard what you did in the registry's office. And she was like, well, whatever I did out of love for you. And she's like, no, you didn't. We clearly have different definitions of the word if that's true. And so she just kind of like stalks away and is just like, it's clear that that relationship has been fracturing for so many years.
Is over.
Yeah. She's not going to talk to her mother again. She first of all, doesn't really need to. Not for money, not for anything, really, at this point. So, fuck her. Yeah. Who cares? She wants to be happy with Atticus. Let her be happy with Atticus. Also, I love Rose's dress.
Yeah.
And she was great.
Dresses are adorable. But they also get a blessing in church, which is lovely. And
the dress
that she uses for that is great.
So, yeah. And so, it's a shit show, but they end up happy.
Right.
And also, Mabel and Tony are getting married.
They show up to the reception. It's cute. And that's pretty much it.
Yeah. I just want to say, and this will be, again, reflected in my best parts. I love this storyline. I love it particularly with Atticus and Rose, because Atticus is so devoted to Rose that there's no question that he would ever do this to Rose, even drunk. Like, it wouldn't happen. And seeing him be like, yeah, no, I'm sorry if I gave you the wrong impression. I'm not interested in you. I just want Rose. Please go away. Yeah. And him being like, what the fuck are you doing in my room? What are you doing here? Please leave. And all that stuff. I understand why Rose is, like, concerned for a second, because who wouldn't be, honestly? If you get pictures.
Well, and Atticus is hot, so.
Yeah, I don't blame them, honestly. Atticus is really hot. But it's just, I can understand it, but then she understands that he is devoted to her. And then also seeing his confrontation with his father and being like, don't Lord Cinderby like insults Rose for a second, like calls her a bad name. And he's just like, don't call her that. I love them. I love them being protective of each other, and him like, especially like standing up for Rose. I love it. Yeah. Rose needed someone like that.
Right. Absolutely. And I think, you know, that devotion, and it's true on both sides.
It's so sweet. I wish we saw more of it.
I do too. And I feel like, you know, Rose is devoted to him as well, and I think that's what was somewhat lacking with her relationship with Jack Ross
and with everybody in general. I think that it's just in general she needed someone who loved her as much as she loved him,
right?
And so, it's very April. It's very sweet. I love it. And again, it's the nervous energy that leads up to
that's obviously the best part for both of us. Is
oh, absolutely. Okay. Going into best parts. Yeah, Rose and Atticus is top of my list. Yeah, they're the best. Mm-hmm. I love them. Especially Atticus. He does so much in this episode where he's defending Rose. And Rose also fights her mother on this stance of like, hey, leave us alone. Mm-hmm. Especially like bringing Atticus, like making Atticus look bad in general. Like, I think that really hurt Rose as well. Mm-hmm. Obviously she doesn't know that Susan did that. But in general, like, who would want something to cause her to be so unhappy and for them to be so unhappy? Like, that's ridiculous. Yeah. So yeah, Rose and Atticus. I like Thomas standing up for Andy. I like that he like steps in and is just like, all right, we're not going to let you be like taken advantage of anymore. I'm going to help you earn back your money. We'll figure this out as we go.
Yeah.
Tom, I really love Tom. I love this. He's the sane person in this situation, and that he's like, listen, Rose, you need to talk to Atticus, all that stuff. Like, he's just always like, he's the straight man in this situation. Mm-hmm. And I really like that.
Very practical.
And Robert, I love Robert in this episode. Robert is not an idiot, and we need to showcase that, because he has been acting like an idiot this first half of the season, and the second half I'm like, okay, you've gotten better. But Robert, like, figuring out obviously the Marigold stuff, and also him doing that for Archie is very sweet of him. Out of his own pocket too. It's very sweet that he noticed how somebody in his staff was hurting so much, and he really cared about her well-being and was just like, Mrs. Padmore, this is for you. It's very sweet. Mm-hmm. And your family in general. Shrimpy. I love Shrimpy. And Lady Cinderbean. Love them. Defending their children and wanting them to be happy. I think that's what parents should do.
Yeah.
And for some reason, Lord Cinderbean and Susan just don't want that. It's ridiculous to me that they don't it's want
selfish.
Like, Lord Cinderbean, we'll talk about that more short time, right? Go ahead.
I would add to your best parts, I would add Violet. I think that she is very good in this episode.
Fighting for Isabel.
And you know, that's pretty much, well, and also acknowledging her own hurt.
Yeah.
So yeah, I like Violet in this episode, but that's pretty much it. So what were your worst points?
Russian, formerly known as Prince. Mm-hmm. I don't care. Susan, oh my God. Anna getting arrested. Ugh. Danka. Ugh.
Oh, God.
Lord Cinderbee. Ugh. And Daisy. Daisy being like, I'm gonna quit. And then she's being like, never mind, I don't want to quit.
Because
I thought for a second, I don't know why I thought this, and I must have just forgotten. I thought that she decided not to quit in the next episode, in the finale, and being like, yeah, no, never mind, I'm not gonna quit. But no, it was barely one in one episode. It was maybe like 5 minutes of screen time, and I was like, I don't care. Right. I mean, like, at this point, maybe I do want you to leave, Daisy. Like, what the fuck is this? So yeah, that's what I'd say.
And I didn't include the best parts, Mr. Mason, but
Mr. Mason,
definitely a best part in this, and he says what we're all thinking is like, I hate for people who love each other to be separated.
Agreed.
I agree. And he's, you know, there, of course, he's talking about William, and it's sweet. So yeah, I like all of those things. The things I hated, obviously, are things that you mentioned. I really hate the whole Anna and Bates bullshit. And Danka. Oh my God. We just make that whole thing stop right now? But no, we can't. So we are going to be going forwarded to the last. Oh, grades. I'm sorry.
Overall grade.
I would give this an A-.
I would too.
So, I mean, I think it's a really solid.
Rose and Annika strike again.
It's a solid episode. I like, of course, the Rose and Annika storyline, and that is the overarching storyline. Yeah. So that makes this episode much, much better.
I think it's broken with the tradition of us giving A's to the penultimate episodes.
Well, whatever.
For the most part. But honestly, it doesn't deserve an A.
It's not an A.
I do love Rose and Atticus.
Hey, for this season, it's really fucking good. So
yeah, I'm excited. It's the best grade we've given this season.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it's a really good episode. It's definitely an episode worth seeing. And if you're
going to. Well, season finales have been doing well with our grading.
If you rewatch, you can kind of skip most of the season.
Until Rose and Atticus come on screen. Like, maybe the last two episodes you can watch, but yeah, I wouldn't, sure. Like, but for context, I suppose you should give some backstory for yourself.
But yeah, still. But if you're, it's only if you're into Marigold.
If you're really into Edith's subplot this season, good for you. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah, because we're not with you on that, but that's okay.
No.
However,
if you, I'm really looking forward to the season finale because I know a lot of characters are introduced in the season finale that I like. And I know that I remember the season finale fondly. And most season finales in general.
Let's hope it's as good as we're thinking it is. So yeah, we're hoping that we are, because we know that this involves going to a castle to shoot grouse, because that's part of the setup that was in the episode we just watched.
Mm-hmm.
That the Cinderbees are inviting the Granthams to shoot grouse.
Yes.
So hopefully we are going to love it as much as we think we are, and we hope that you join us. And
cheers.